The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's Mad Tech Podcast. Thanks for joining us as we discuss all things media, marketing and commerce. I'm John Still, Head of Content at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined by not one but two members of the ExchangeWire team today. Our COO, Lindsay Roundry. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hello.
And CSO, Kieran O'Kane. Thank you for joining, Kieran.
Thanks. Great to be here, as ever.
High octane start, as usual.
What do you mean? It's just the start. It's the, you know, the calm before the hurricane.
It will be a hurricane.
Google and predictions. As usual, we'll be discussing some of this week's major news stories, as well as looking at some of Kieran's predictions for the industry ahead of our ATS London conference. So, our first story, Amazon's plan to introduce cashback in exchange for shopping data. Amazon has introduced a new cashback scheme that rewards customers for sharing their external purchase data. The shopping list savings feature allows customers to browse selected deals on products at their store of choice and add them to their shopping list within the Alexa app. The customer can then redeem the cashback offer by uploading a photo of their receipt to the app post-purchase and will receive a rebate into their Amazon gift card balance within 48 hours. According to an FAQ on the feature's landing page, the rebates are provided by manufacturers of the eligible products. This new scheme gives Amazon not just an even keener insight into what their customers are buying, but more information into how the bricks and mortar competitors price their products. Lindsay, there are a lot of questions, I think, to answer with this. Does this extensive data collection fuel concerns surrounding Amazon's undercutting of rival merchants? And is this a smart move by Amazon, or could it reignite anti-competitive scrutiny?
I think it is smart and interesting, but yes, there will be a lot of scrutiny around this. It took me a while to exactly work out what they're doing and how it works. If you go onto their site, there's a little... Again, I'm assuming this is US only at the moment. I tried, like, if you go onto their site, it gives you a little diagram of how it works. Basically, you add a product, an offered product onto your shopping list on your Alexa device. You would then go and do your shopping. You would then take a picture of the receipt and scan the barcodes of the stuff that's on offer on your Alexa shopping list. And then Amazon will give you money back, as I understand it. What you just said was that the rebates come from the manufacturers themselves. So they are in on this. So they're not trying to undercut the manufacturers of these products, but they probably are trying to undercut the retailers of the products. So for example, if this was a UK example, I could see that Heinz ketchup is on offer in my Alexa app, add it to my Alexa shopping list, go to Sainsbury's, one of the UK's biggest grocery stores, buy Heinz ketchup, then scan it, and then having bought it from Sainsbury's, get money back from Amazon as a rebate, as a gift voucher. It's really interesting because Amazon will have so much more data about how you shop and where you're shopping and what you're doing. They can see what stores you're actually buying things from, not just what you're buying, because you have to scan the entire receipt so they can see exactly where everything's been bought from. They can see the prices of everything, so they can get all this data about you, about the stores themselves, and then they can use that to encourage manufacturers to offer these products for less money on Amazon, because Amazon are going big on Amazon Fresh, in the UK certainly, and stop you from going to your usual grocer. Fascinating. They all get in trouble for this. They've already got in trouble so many times for undercutting and looking at popular products and then trying to develop themselves. They now have to label everything as an Amazon brand, so they're not as liable to do that. This is going to cause ruckus, in my opinion.
Yeah, it seems like the manufacturer's complicity in it and their involvement will maybe ease the path to start with. But the whole idea of the data they'll get about their competitors' pricing, their ability to control the prices in the marketplace through the data they'll have as well, there are so many questions around it. Kieran, what do you think of this move?
This is classic Amazon. Classic Amazon. I totally agree with Lindsay. It's just, it'll probably result in price gouging, and it will be flagged by whatever legislative body is controlling anti-competitive behaviour in the UK or in Europe. I just don't see this going down very well. A lot of the legacy companies would be UK-based companies and paying tax here. Amazon is not a friend of the taxpayer. So I just want this killed, killed at birth. I don't want to see this becoming a thing, because Amazon already has so much power in terms of the data they ingest. And the fact that they could apply this to their own physical stores is just disgusting, really. I mean, talk about, you know, leveraging one monopoly for another. And manufacturers say, now, well, this is an opportunity for us to get more purchases. I'd like to see the process in action and see how they're doing it. But there's no way that the brands or the likes of Sainsbury's can stop Amazon scanning the details. So it's just the way Amazon sees is probably free data, feeds the algorithm, feeds the beast. But I could just see this going down very badly among politicians and legislators. This is not going to go down well in Europe, that's for sure.
No. I also think, though, in the UK, that we're slightly safer in that the purchasing habits of UK consumers generally are still actually grocer brand led rather than manufacturer brand led for a lot of products. So most of us in US supermarkets, you're normally buying branded milk. You aren't buying Walmart milk or Costco milk. You're buying milk from a different brand, which we don't really do in this country to a degree. A lot of stuff we still buy is the grocer's own brand. You obviously can't price gouge on that. And many consumers still feel really safe and comfortable going to their grocer. Are they going to shift to Amazon, which is unknown to them in terms of like, will I buy a chicken breast from Amazon versus like Sainsbury's or Tesco, which I know the quality of chicken breast is going to be different. Like it's that kind of stuff in the UK might make it not, I don't think it's here yet because I just tried going to my Alexa app to find this mythical shopping list. Apparently I added some milk and that's all I could do. And there was no offers in there. So I'm assuming this is still US only. And I think it will work in the US, and the competitive laws at the moment are probably a little bit different so they can get away with it. I can't see it working as well in Europe, but of course, if it takes off in the US, then it easily could work in Europe. Also, anecdotally, in my shopping list, apparently, I have ham, which apparently is completed and I bought it, a lamp again, and Boyzone, the popular Irish boy band. So they're on my Amazon Alexa
absolutely
shopping list.
Absolutely shit band.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't agree with you when I was 10 years old, but...
Those 10-year-olds need mental help, I think.
Thank you.
Not you, but the people scarred from Boyzone.
Right,
and
okay.
Westlife.
Yes,
good
sure.
God, we are responsible. What was the other one called? Bewitched. Another
Bewitched, yeah. With God. Twins.
Yeah, terrible.
The 90s had some wonderful pop music from
really
Ireland.
Did, yeah,
some really terrible music. I wonder if this is... I've been thinking of this recently. I wonder if people are starting to really think about how much data they're giving to Amazon, that there is starting to it's slowly seeping in that American companies are not your friend. And I think, like, the more you hammer this home, the more people are going to, some people will, I just don't want to use Amazon's products. I use their e-commerce site because it's fast and efficient, but all of the adjacent apps, I try to stay away from them. Likewise, Google, I try to, you know, diversify my use around Google and all the rest of it. But I wonder if there will be people going, not quite sure I want to give all this data like to Amazon. Maybe this is what government should be playing on. Like, you know, that company doesn't really have the welfare of people in mind, right? They're not paying any tax. They're paying some tax, but they're not paying the tax they should be paying in this country and in Europe. And really what they're doing is they're gouging and sort of like slicing apart the physical store infrastructure, right? And these are companies that employ people in the UK and Europe and also contribute quite a lot to the tax base. I mean, it's a parallel conversation, obviously, but I wonder if that is going through people's minds around this stuff. Like,
interestingly, there was a show on Channel 5, which is a UK broadcaster, the other week, about kind of Amazon and how Amazon does it. And there was like tips and tricks of how to stop Amazon tracking you. And there was one big thing saying, if you want Amazon to stop tracking you on other non-Amazon sites, which obviously every site does, like, every site that's tracking you and dropping pixels all over the show. There's an easy way of going and doing that. And I am interested because your average consumer would have watched that show. I'm interested in how many people would have seen that and gone straight into their account and then switched that toggle off. I certainly did.
So they can track. I thought, like, well, you could just buy Apple when they couldn't track anywhere.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, that's the perfect. I would be anti-Apple in many ways, but I'm starting to gravitate towards getting another Apple device because, you know, it's that type of invasive tracking that's putting the industry in a you know, the headlights in terms of like how they use people's data. And it's interesting that those types of shows are starting to appear, because I think it's starting to permeate in the natural sort of discourse of people, day-to-day people, going, I don't feel comfortable with this. There's a lot of heat around it. And the fact that I'm the same way, I think more and more people are turning off, are going into the settings and turning off, are putting into, strict privacy controls about what data is used by them.
Do you think with this move, Amazon have underestimated that in terms of their consumer base? They think that by throwing them a gift card with some more money on it from Amazon, that they'll be happy to give their shopping data over. Have they underestimated? Is that what people will go for, do you think? Are consumers getting wise to the data situation?
Maybe I certainly don't know what the cashback economy is like. I mean, there's always going to be people looking for those, those coupon-esque type products. And maybe Amazon doesn't need an awful lot of data. They just need some data so they can price their products accordingly. It's clever from them, but you're going to call it out from what it is. It's a way for them to, take data from the competitors and then set the prices so they can take market share from them. I mean, it's very, very clever. And I guess it's how do you, is it wrong? Yes. But is it like, are they doing anything really wrong in terms of the law? I'm not sure.
I agree. I think that, I don't want to make extreme generalizations, but I think that in Europe, I think we're much more data privacy aware.
Yeah.
Because of all the regulation that's happened over the past, GDPR is 4 years old this week. So we've lived that for the past 4 years, and that's not just hit us in the industry, that's hit the average consumer trying to understand exactly how our data is being used. It's probably much more awareness of it than there probably is in the broader US population. So can they get away with it in the US more than they can over here? And it's, it only takes a few consumers, for them, a few hundred thousand consumers to switch off their data, to have the equivalent few hundred thousand provide that data for them to go, this has been worth it, because we can now price gouge.
Yeah, the US privacy situation is a free-for-all, and we see it ourselves. Ad tech does not care about privacy in the US. It does not care. I mean, you see the type of companies that are still activating the type of practices they are in the US, and they're not really progressing their product development at all to encompass privacy. What they're being forced by is the likes of Apple, who said, no, not on my platform. We've strict regulations here, strict laws, but that platform piece is forcing the American ad tech companies more, and the other apps like Facebook and Meta and Amazon and all the rest of it, who use data as a tool to push sales. So it's interesting. I don't think it's going to go in here. I'd like to see how it's been done in the US, but I have a feeling that it won't go down as well here.
Speaking of the US and regulation, our second story this week involves Google and a proposed law that has some fairly widespread implications for the ad tech industry. A proposed piece of legislation, the Competition and Transparency in Digital Advertising Act, could basically force Google to dismantle their ad business. The cross-party proposal was presented to Congress last Thursday, and it would bar companies that process more than $20 billion worth of digital advertising transactions per year from participating in more than one part of the digital advertising ecosystem. That's pretty grim reading for Google's ad business. They span the entire ecosystem and would become basically illegal. Republican Senator Mike Lee, who is leading this charge, has taken aim at Google specifically, saying that they have an unfair, undue advantage in the marketplace, one that doesn't necessarily reflect the value they provide. Kieran, we had a message from you when this news broke saying this is huge. This will alter.
I always say these are huge.
This will alter the face of ad tech. Yeah, are you sticking with that? Could Google's ad business be broken up?
Yeah,
and
drama,
what would the consequences be if so?
The drama was to level 10 that day.
It was.
Okay, so it's interesting from a few point of view, from a couple of points of view. One, it's a bipartisan bill, right? The Republicans seem to hate Google as much as some of the Democrats. So Google would be seen as a liberal brand in the US. And I hate to bring politics into this, but you have to with the US because it's so binary. But the thing is, the law is very, very interesting. Remember, there's been a couple of cases brought against Google. The Texas, Attorney General, who is a lunatic Republican. Like, this man is you know, oh my God, he's out, you know, way off the reservation. He brought a case against, and then a load of states jumped in, a lot of red states, and then some blue states, kind of like Democrats' states, were reluctantly sort of backed it was a very much an ad tech focused legal challenge to Google about their anti-competitive behavior because of all the Meta price fixing, and they're just, you know, them acting as buy and sell side in ad tech. So this law, if it passes, would literally change the landscape. Google would have to sell DoubleClick. They would have to sell DoubleClick because what it's saying is you can still operate search and you can still operate YouTube, but you cannot be a mediator in terms of the buying and selling of media impressions in digital advertising, which would be unbelievable. I mean, it would mean that Google, and by the way, if the law passes, they have 12 months to sell that product, that business. So Google would have to literally sell DoubleClick. Like, they'd have to spin it out. Now, there's a couple of things here that are important to highlight. One, there's a process for a bill to be started off as a brought onto the floor and then get signed off by the president, right? There's loads of different processes. It has to go to the committee and it has to be passed by the Senate and the House of Representatives. So the Republicans would have to get a lot of Democrats on board, and there's quite a lot of Democrats who would be friendly with Google. The second thing that's very important is Google has one of the biggest lobbyist groups in the US, and they provide a lot of money to a lot of politicians. Now, American politics is completely dysfunctional. We've seen the power the National Rifle Association has over gun control in the US, which has been to the detriment of that country in terms of the safety of their citizens, children, and adults alike. So don't underestimate Google's ability to water this down if it goes any further, right? They will use all sorts of tactics. They will whisper in the ears of various senators. They have lobbyists are basically corrupt and morally retarded individuals. Like they have no backbone in terms of a moral compass, and they will use every trick in the book to get senators voted. They'll talk about how, you know, the exceptionalism of the United States has been challenged by this law. Monopolies are great for Google, provides money to all sorts of people. It's a load of bullshit. The amount of money that Google takes from our ecosystem is incredible, and it's nobody really knows how much of it because they operate so many black box arbitrage vehicles across the ecosystem, buy side, sell side, addicts, the whole works. They give away their ad server for free so people pump money into addicts so they can make a massive margin. They operate a DSP, they operate the sell side, they operate every layer of ad tech. They're there, right? And then they use AdWords demand to pump up, to extend their power within the ecosystem. So I think this would be a very significant piece of legislation. Now, while I'm kind of giving it a low chance of success, I think this is the first of many. Google can't keep fighting this off. If they keep increasing their revenue by 20% every year, eventually someone's going to go, this is enough. Enough's enough. Like, there's companies going out of business. We need you to stop making as much money and having this kind of power. And it all kind of stems from their acquisition of DoubleClick. I think that should have never happened. Oh my God. I don't know if you've passed that. Those people should be never allowed into another sort of anti-competitive meeting again. So while this is kind of like, I'm pouring some cold water on this idea, sort of, I think that the noose is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And the ability for Google to tap dance around all these legislative processes and anti-competitive cases is going to get harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. That eventually the team who runs the business will say, let's just spin this out. We don't need this headache. Let's just focus on search. Because Google actually does focus. Like, search is their core business. It drives revenue. YouTube drives revenue. Ad tech is just a means for them to control a lot of the ecosystem. And losing that would weaken some of the control, but they'll still make a ton of money from search.
Lindsay, what do you reckon? Is this the first crack in the dam? Is this going to make a huge difference to Google going forward? What do you think?
I I do agree with Kieran. I don't think it will make a huge difference to Google going forward at this stage, but I think that it is, it's a starting point. Well, one of many starting points. Things are always going to get harder for Google, but like, you know, to Kieran's point about the strength of their lobbyists, you know, the first thing that Google came out with in their official statement was this could decimate SMEs. We're in a cost of living crisis and they rely on our products and services to be able to offer, to be able to promote their products, that their wares to consumers. And they will not survive if we are forced to get rid of these products. It's like, I mean, that's, of course, they come straight in with a sob story. Of course they do, yeah. Rachel is acting as sound guy today and she's playing a little tiny violin in the corner. But that's exactly it. Like, they're using those tactics to try to get into the hearts and minds of people and go, well, all the small businesses will go, oh my God, that's true. Like, actually, could I survive without Google? Because Google, obviously, are kind of pushing the fact, actually, there aren't many SMEs that are using Google's ad server. They're using Google Search. And Google Search probably isn't going, or they're using YouTube to promote their stuff. That probably isn't going anywhere. It's the large enterprises that are using the proper kind of double click stack, if you like. It's not your mum and pop shop down the road. Mm. They're probably using proximity search, and that's what gets them their business. And everything else is kind of a bonus. So Google are trying to spin the story in a way that probably actually isn't accurate, but to your average person, they'll go, oh no, you're right. That's a terrible idea. We must stop this from happening. Also, I find it interesting that Facebook declined to comment when this was launched as well, and because they're going to be affected too. Yeah. But I think that Google, I mean, we'll get onto kind of Kieran's predictions around this, but it's interesting that your determination that it was going to happen has kind of waned over the days.
I wouldn't say waned. I would say it's the crack in the dams are happening. But here's the thing that really we should dig deeper on, but not now, not in this podcast, because it probably deserves a whole episode. What happens if Google were forced to sell DoubleClick and then Google did not bring the AdWords demand into the ecosystem? It would kill quite a lot of ad tech businesses because they are dining off the Google feast, crumbs, if you will. It's a feast for ad tech, obviously, given how big AdWords is. But I wonder how many companies would struggle, like, because there's been some interesting comments on LinkedIn. Rob Webster is a quite interesting character in terms of those comments when he talks about how Google focused a lot of the agencies are, even though we are now in a walled garden war, right? And I wonder how bad a Google withdrawal from ad tech would be for a lot of companies. There's a lot of third parties that are depending off Google's money. I ran a poll on LinkedIn about, you know, what would happen to Google's third party business. And I think, like I said, never leave. And that was the actual, you know, the biggest percentage of the vote, 58%. And then I kind of threw in a few others, like spun out in 3 years, and that was like 29%. But then said, no, leave Google alone to make me loads of money. And I got like 12%. And I looked at the people who were actually, because I could see the results of the poll, and I could see the people who voted for, you know, publishers, ad tech companies. They know the reality. And this is the
thing. We have to ask you this offline, who said that?
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating. I mean, like, if you want to buy me a load of pints, listeners, then I'll tell you. But it's just fascinating to see the people who voted for it. I'm not going to reveal who they are, by the way. But it's just hilarious because it was like brazenly saying, no, Google, never leave. You make me so much money. And that's the thing. If you take away particularly AdWords demand, right, which is absolutely huge, and only people realize, like, that powers the AdSense, it powers a lot of the bids within AdX itself. That is an incredibly powerful piece of demand in the space. And it's hilarious. I on the one hand, I think for the good of the industry, Google probably need their wings need to be clipped. But I'm interested to see if that happened, what would be the results for ad tech as a whole, because I actually think there's a lot of people paying lip service to my rantings and shoutings and the sidelines. But the reality is, if they went tomorrow morning, it'd be a disaster for them.
It would. The agency thing that you say there is interesting, because actually it's still to this day kind of a maverick move to step away from Google and use an alternative provider. Like, and it shouldn't be. It really, really shouldn't be. It was when I back when I was in agency land, it was a very maverick move, and it surprises me that 10 years, 12 years down the line, it still very much is the same case. And I thought we would be on that, but we're really not. Like,
but is it suicidal?
Google make it, the thing we have to reconcile with is Google still make it so easy.
Yeah.
They make it really easy. Yeah, yeah. The customer service you get, the scale they've got, the way they operate. They're still trying to usurp agencies and go straight to the brands, of course, which still annoys agencies and is very, very frustrating for everybody involved. But they do make it easy to use them. And actually, in privacy wars, in a world where everything's becoming much more complicated, Google Storm are the easy choice. And so if I can't invest in the anonymous web, if I can't do this, if I can't do these things easily, I'll just put my budget into Google because I know where I can put it. And I can always scale up Google. It's highly unlikely, unless I'm the biggest advertiser in the world, that I've maxed out on Google. Okay. Highly unlikely.
But the problem with that is that even, like, the world is a lot different from it was 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Definitely.
With a cookie and an ID, you had scale, right? And Google, in that instance, is the perfect partner, right? But now we have this huge fragmentation, right? You've got Apple, who are going to be a massive ad ecosystem. No play in that, right? There's no way to use Google technology to buy across that. Retail media is another example. So, you know, Amazon have his own ecosystem. eBay will have his own ecosystem. Sainsbury. Google won't be able to get its dirty paws into that. CTV. A lot of European broadcasters refuse to use Google, right? Because of YouTube. So, is it... It seems a bit, like, short-sighted from an agency point of view who should be, you know, looking at the whole omnichannel piece to just use Google, right? And to Lindsay's point, it's just easier sometimes. But I actually think that's a dangerous game to play given where we're going. I suppose, as I said, you could have a whole podcast on this because it's intriguing. Maybe we should actually. Maybe Google, the industry needs Google more than Google needs the industry.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that we've covered in that. And, you know, the idea that you mentioned earlier, Kieran, of how big is too big, and people are going to start wondering that. It seems that, as Lindsay said, with the SMEs wondering if they need Google, and then the ad tech companies who are secretly also needing Google, whether so their position is so strong that legislation like this won't pass. But one of your predictions for 2022, which we're going to move on to now, is that Google will be forced to divest their tech stack. You gave that in our new rating system of rosé bottles out of 5. You gave that prediction a 3 out of 5 for possibility.
I may have drank the other 2 bottles. That's probably why I gave it a 3.
Are you sticking by your 3 out of 5 for this happening?
I think eventually we are going to see a situation where this happens, that Google will just say, this is enough's enough, I'm getting out because I've got the EU breathing down my neck. I can't justify these increases when I control most of third-party ad tech. Look, I think it would be a disaster for the majority of ad tech, but actually the good companies, the ones who are innovating, will have a field day around this. So, you know, anybody who offers an alternative to Google around ad serving, a good example would be Smart Ad Server, right? We're doing something that can, and we're doing a report for it in a minute. But they're a good example of an alternative, right? And there's companies like Kevil who are building, customized ad servers. And there's plenty of companies like IPOM who offer a different infrastructure play. So while there's a lot of companies who rely on that demand from Google to make their companies up, but then there's companies like The Trade Desk who don't need Google. And I've proved it. Like, Jeff Green is a genius. He's built an amazing business that actually is a proper rival to DV360 and a proper alternative. It's interesting, Lindsay, when you said a company or AZ's not taking a risk of using a third-party ad tech player other than Google. And the Goodwood Group is actually a very good example, who just use Trade Desk. And they're actually flying because they offer something that no other agency offers. So I think this will happen. I'm not sure if it's going to be the 12 months that we talked about, but it's certainly going to happen at some stage in the next 2-3 years. And I'm going to stick by this prediction. I'll probably be wrong in 2025. I'll still be blithering around about this. Google are going, like...
I mean, you have been for the past 3 years anyway, so why should the next 5 years change?
I'm sticking by this one.
Lindsay, what do you reckon? Is 3 out of 5 fair for this prediction? Can you see it going another way?
I think it's probably going to be lower than 3 out of 5, frankly.
It's probably,
I think it's probably more like 1 out, particularly these are 2022 predictions, right? So those not aware,
let's trick the two
written
balls.
A piece of all his predictions. This is, I think, 1 out of 5.
Right. We'll drink the other two bottles.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Done.
Maybe I've already drank the...
One of your strongest rosé-rated predictions was that Zero ID is going to cause havoc across Europe.
Yeah.
I think this is a really interesting point on what this is actually going to do.
Yeah.
And is this... You happy with your 4 out of 5 for this?
I genuinely think this is a huge problem. I like the Google thing is just me being pedantic, obviously, because I've stood by it for the last 3 years.
Dog with a bone.
Yeah, I am a dog with a bone when this comes to it. And, you know, me and Google have a bit of niggle. I love the Google people, by the way. But in terms of the Zero ID stuff, I think it is a really big problem, right? So what you have is Google, obviously, were fined 100 million by the French DPA for not offering a reject all button. And then once that happened, it started to appear across all the CMPs, right? So every like consent management platform had a reject all button. I just seen it. I didn't even know Twig it myself, but they all have it highlighted now. And the click rates on the reject all button is going up significantly, to the point that I heard recently from an Italian publisher that the reject all from their users was about 55%. Now, the problem with that is ad tech doesn't resolve towards an ID. They need an ID. They're in the business of matching IDs, right? So if you don't have a consented user, you can't pass that consent string to ad tech and they can't monetize that user, right? So basically this user becomes unmonetizable and nobody in ad tech is figuring this stuff out. So they've basically hit losing a lot of revenue across that 55% audience number, which is incredible, right? And if this is one sort of outlier, a lot of publishers are going to start seeing this. And ad tech has not built are building towards this. In fact, I got told by one of the vendors that they are a contextual business and they cannot seem to monitor, they can't connect any demand because nobody's wired that way. Now, Europe is like Europe is an afterthought for many ad tech companies in the US, right? So I think this is a big opportunity for an ad tech company to build infrastructure here to help those publishers monetize those users. And Zero ID, while it's not a phrase yet, will be a phrase, right? Because I hit the reject all button because I know what's going on in the background, right? And I won't be the only one because people are going, I don't know who half these vendors are. So that is going to be a big problem in the next 6 months.
I think you're saying that Europe is an afterthought for many US vendors.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an afterthought. I think it's completely being ignored.
It's annoying. Like,
but it is annoying. And actually, I think they're bypassing Europe and going to APAC, where the regulation is not quite as stringent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming. Don't get me wrong. It's coming in APAC too.
Yeah.
But we are a pain in their backside.
Yeah.
An absolute pain. They'd rather not have to deal with us. But that's that represents a great opportunity for European ad tech, frankly.
Yeah, well, if there's any company listening to this now, if you talk to some of the contextual vendors, they'll tell you all about it. If you dig into this a little deeper, you're going to realize that there is a massive opportunity. Even Google's ad server doesn't resolve to, like, they resolve to an ID, right? That's what they want. Like, so, you know, the consentless user is very valuable, but there's nobody building the proper infrastructure to monetize that user. So that's definitely 4 out of 5.
Yeah. Lindsay, do you agree?
I do agree. I think this is a strong one. Yeah.
A strong rating. Let's have one more of your predictions because we've been
Let's do some of the M&A stuff. I want to...
Okay. I was going to go into Netflix because we've heard quite a lot of
Netflix,
that.
Netflix, you know, they'll end up using...
There are some great ones. Netflix, retail media.
Yep.
There's tons.
Let's do one of the... Let's do the two acquisitions, right? So I the first one obviously goes into retail media, Shopify buying Criteo, right? It's Shopify obviously launched an audience product this year around advertising. Their business has kind of like wobbled a little bit, share prices down. So advertising revenue is a good way for them to build a new revenue stream, right? A fairly decent revenue stream. They've got 1 million sites on their infrastructure. They only have to flick a switch. Well, allegedly, and they could start monetizing, but they don't have an ad tech infrastructure. So Criteo have obviously pivoted themselves away from display retargeting skillfully. They're buying OpenWeb. I know that deal got sidelined thanks to Mr. Putin invading Ukraine. But that deal looks like it's back on probably the end of next month, or probably done before Cannes. I guarantee it'll be done before Cannes. That means that crypto now has a really interesting infrastructure play. I could see Shopify buying it, right? And crypto is pretty cheap at the minute, like $2 billion market cap. I think they're too cheap, to be honest with you. And you could basically see them just embedding that in their infrastructure, and they could have not only like a buy side play, they could have a sell side play, so they could build a Shopify ID graph to help buyers buy across all those different websites, but flip it on its side as well. They could basically, using the open web better in a box and create his infrastructure, they could allow all of those small buyers to be participants in the programmatic piece, leveraging their own first party data and Shopify segments. So I actually think that would be a really, really tidy acquisition for Shopify.
Lindsay, do you reckon Shopify could become the retail media powerhouse? Do you reckon that kind of acquisition should be on their horizon for this year?
I do. I think Shopify is such a fascinating company in terms of how they've managed to, you know, arguably infiltrate many different areas of commerce. And they've got partnerships with everyone from Amazon to TikTok to, you know, you name it. And I think that them going down the route of more of an infrastructure play when it comes to the media side of things, they're already starting to do things. This would make so much sense given kind of the journey Criteo has been on over the past 10 years. This would play into what I believe Shopify are trying to do really, really nicely.
Yeah, so we've got this one rated as a 2 out of 5. You've both made incredibly convincing cases for it. I think Shopify should be informed that should be their consideration, and maybe we should up that to.
We should talk to their M&A team and say you should buy.
Look what's there.
But I think
a bottle of rosé.
But the reason it's a bit lower is that I think that Criteo is incredibly cheap, and maybe they think, you know, if we continue with this retail media narrative and build out our infrastructure, then the likes of Shopify will come calling and probably acquire us. So that's why I have it at 2 out of 5. Maybe they need just to get through this sticky, you know, bloodbath in the tech market, and then they'd sell maybe the year after next. That's why I have it 2.
But I mean, your truly wild card predictions are the best ones.
Yeah.
And actually,
maybe
I remember when Google divesting DoubleClick was the original wild card prediction properly, yeah, back in the day.
Yeah.
And while you're still sticking to your guns here, like a dog with a bone, as we said, it's actually becoming more and more of reality. Yeah. So
it's, well, you know, a broken clock and
stick
all that.
With it. Like, well, you know, exactly. I mean? There you go.
The other one, which I was a bit of a wild card, was the Mediocean buying Magnite. Now, the reason I came to that conclusion was with the OpenPath rollout from the trade desk, I just got the sense that the trade desk was looking at, you know, I want to go straight to the supplier. I don't want to have a layer in between, right? And there's this convergence happening between buy and sell side. So Mediocean are obviously coming from the workflow piece, right? But they're an incredibly important part of the back end processes for agencies and buyers. And they bought Flash Talking, which is basically an execution layer. So it wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility that they would look at someone like Magnite, who have incredible links to agencies and have a bunch of interesting sort of CTV and display capabilities and assets, to think, you know, we could own that whole supply chain, right? Why are we going, you know, because that's what Mediocean are going, right? I think the future of our industry is a mix between, you know, operational workflow, particularly around walled gardens, and the execution layer, right? Whether that's an ID or a context or whatever. So the two of them are going to converge in terms of like a buying platform. So the ability to kind of buy across TV, whether it's CTV or walled garden TV or linear TV, out of home, all the different channels that you want to buy across. That would be a combination of like a programmatic execution and a workflow piece. So I think that the Trade Desk and Mediocean are on a collision course at some stage in the next 2 to 3 years. And that's the reason why I could see Vista Equity Partners, who own Mediocean, loaning the $1.5 billion or $2 billion that's necessary to buy Magnite, to add them in. And I think it's not crazy. It is crazy, but it's not crazy crazy. If
it
you
is
know what
crazy.
Me.
It's, I mean, it, we have it down as a 3 out of 5 crazy rather than a 1 out of 5 crazy.
I think this could be the weird announcement of Cannes. I think there's going to be something from Cannes announced, and I think this could be it. Do you remember the day I actually got AT&T and App Nexus right when I said that? That was one of my predictions. And that deal happened just before Cannes. I have a feeling something is brewing. This is a really out there acquisition. But then all the best deals in ad tech are those left field acquisitions. God, I didn't see that one coming. But this that convergence between buy and sell side is happening. Now, you'll hear SSPs going, oh, we need that layer. We need to have that layer. Not on CTV, right? There's a limited supply available, right? Like, it's not like infinite impressions on the web where you could just spin up some crap site and then away you go, right? And there was a problem with programmatic. In CTV and TV, you've got a finite amount of ad-supported supply, good ad-supported supply. So why do you need a sell side infrastructure?
I get your reasons for Magnite. But just Magnite or are there others on the table?
No, Magnite is an obvious, but, you know, realistically, you could buy you could see a Pomatic or an Index being thrown in the mix. A Magnite was interesting because they have CTV
the
infrastructure.
They have the acquisition
they
made.
Server, yep. The, you know, the CTV ad server, SpotX, and they bought Spring Server. So, you know, that from a CTV point of view, and plus Magnite are doing incredible numbers in CD, but they might not be the other ones. There could be other sell side plays in that space. But I think that you're going to see that convergence. I don't think the Trade Desk necessarily have to buy an SSP because they're just going straight into the header. They have a very aggressive supply team who are just going to. Oh, and it's true. You look at the hiring, right? They're hiring everybody, right? And I think that's a really interesting one. That's my wild card.
I like the wild card. We're all going to wait very excitedly to see how these predictions play out. And you can read all of Kieran's predictions pre-ATS London on exchangewire.com. The article is live now, so have a look through, see what you think, see if you agree or disagree with his rosé ratings. That is all for today. We are out of time. Thank you very, very much for joining us. Lindsay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Great
Kieran,
chat.
Kieran, thank you very much.
Pleasure as always.
And we will hopefully see you all at ATS London. Thank you very much.